The toy bar is open! Come wander on in, grab a stool, and hang out with a drink while your hosts and toy barflies, Jason Duvall and Dave Draper, discuss, argue, and celebrate their love of toys, games, and all things collectible. Brought to you by Shellhead Comics and More. This is Dave and Duvall's Toys and Collectibles.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to an all-new episode of Dave and Duvall's Toys and Collectibles right here on ToyWorldOrder.com and on iTunes and Stitcher under Toy World Order, brought to you by Shellhead Comics, the Shellhead Comics blog, and more at ShelledComics.com. I'm Duvall. Welcome, Dave Draper!
Yay!
We're back, gang. We're back from a weekend of not going to toy shows.
Hooray.
Part of me was a little sad.
I was sad.
A little sad.
It's a little sad. I got some updates from people who were at the show. Apparently it was not that great, what I've heard.
And the spring shows are always weird.
And they said there was a lot of modern stuff, which I'm assuming translates into pops.
Yep. It doesn't surprise me because, again, last year's spring show was pretty good.
Yeah.
And that's because it didn't run parallel to C2E2. This year, the shows ran the same weekend. So many of the dealers that would have
set up
were set up at C2E2, thinking they'd get more eyes, they'd make more money. So next year, it looks like it's going to be the opposite again. C2E2 is the first first or second weekend in April, and then hopefully King County is like the third weekend in April.
Well, King County is apparently always the same weekend. Like, it's C2E2 that moves around.
No, that's what I mean. Like, King County stays, but next year's C2E2 is like April 2nd and 3rd and 4th or something like that. So it's like at the start of the month, which, awesome.
I actually felt kind of, I felt more bad about...
You were a little bummed.
I felt more bad about missing out on C2E2 this time around. I kind of miss seeing, you know, the guys at the Nerd City.
Yeah. I don't think Nerd City themselves were set up anymore.
You know what I mean? Well, yeah. The table that always lets, you know, there were several guys there that was kind of let, you know, Manor Monster and, you know.
Battle Babies and all those
Battle
guys.
Battle Babies. They always let us kind of crash at their thing. And I
we haven't got to see them in a couple years. Not all together.
Nope.
And just running into them at shows at King County, we run into quite a few of them every once in a while. But, I haven't seen Ben Spencer in
a couple years.
Yeah, a couple years now. I'm kind of sad. I love Ben. Dave and I hung out, kind of. Dave did. Dave hung out at home because he had a sick puppy dog.
Yeah.
I journeyed out on Saturday to an auction that was a complete waste of my time, an hour away. they had 1,000+ metal lunch boxes. I should have known something was going to be horribly, horribly wrong when I got there, and I had to park a mile and a half away.
It's cute that you think that if you can find this auction, a million other people can't find this auction.
Well, no, that's not what I thought. I thought, well, I'll go give it a chance. It's only an hour away.
Yeah, I'm just saying, like, lunch boxes are a big thing.
Right.
Like, it's an attractive nuisance.
Yeah. So I walked a mile and a half to the auction, got my number, walked up.
Your calves look amazing.
Thank you. Listened to what the lunch boxes were selling for, looked around for another 10 minutes, turned around and walked all the way back to the car and left.
Yeah.
I was like, no, we're not. I'm not playing this game. Like, in the auction listing, the pictures, the lunch boxes actually look good. But when you started looking at them in person, they'd been sitting in a barn for like 20, 30 years. I mean, literally, it's what they look like. They had like mice nests still on top of some of the lunch boxes. And they were just dirty and nasty. Yeah. And the plastic lunch boxes they had were destroyed. Like, stickers were gone. And like, everything was just dirty and filthy. And I was just like, it's not worth my time. Wow. Or, like, none of them had thermoses. The few choice ones, the ones that were getting picked off, were super expensive money. I was like, nope. So I went to go see our buddies at JR's Mini Mall and then journeyed home.
Did you get an update on Creepy Doll?
Creepy Doll is still there.
Creepy Doll is still there.
Creepy Doll is still there. Creepy Doll has its own spot.
Oh, good.
Yes. Yes. Honestly, Creepy Doll should be kept under glass because screw that doll. It's freaking creepy.
Creepy Doll should be locked in a vault and dumped in a quarry.
I agree. That thing can stare into your soul and burn it. Some toy news.
Okay.
Our friends at Boss Fight Studios are getting ready to launch their pre-orders for Series 2 of Vitruvian Hacks.
Yay.
The Fantasy Wave, which we've been waiting. Oh my god, Jocon was here 2 years ago now?
Yeah.
And that's where we first saw the glimpses of the
fans. That's where I first saw them. But I mean, they were kind of talking about what they were planning on doing next when they started the Kickstarter.
Yes.
And that's the weird and frustrating thing, like, about Boss Fight, is they're like the opposite of these Zika guys, where, like, you know, they're cranking out all this stuff at once.
Right.
Like, Boss Fight is like, they'll tell you what their plans are, and you're like, I want this all now!
Yes, yes.
Why can't you be like Zika and overpromise everything? Because I want the fantasy stuff. I want the retro sci-fi stuff.
Yes.
I'm keen to see what they do with the weird aquatic...
The pirates versus
horrible sea monster stuff.
Mm-hmm. But the first four figures they've showed for the pre-orders that start May 1st, according to their Facebook page, is our knight, our elven female archer, an orc warrior, and a gargoyle woman.
Okay.
That's what she looks like. That's what demon. She looks like. No, maybe a demon.
She a tiefling.
She looks more like a gargoyle thingy.
Don't cotton to these new character races in these later editions of the D&D. Don't care for them.
There goes Dave.
The tiefling and the dragonborn. No, sir. Don't like it.
Don't like it one bit.
My day, you didn't have them.
They look really nice, though. I'm really excited to have those finally appear. I know Dave's been, like Dave said, he's wanted that stuff, like, now. Like, want it now. Get it now.
Yeah.
The other boss fight thing is they gave us our first full looks at both Bucky O'Hare and co-pilot Jenny, or first mate Jenny, actually. And they look amazing.
Yeah, they look good.
I mean, they really do look spectacular. Bucky, of course, has got three different interchangeable faces, three sets of hands, both his laser pistols, full articulation. He looks very much on model to the comic book, which is what they were going for. Especially they've got Bucky next to his already released toy counterpart from years ago.
Oh.
Yeah.
All right, so he's basically the same size.
He is the same. They're basically the same size as the original Bucky figures. They're just not stooped in that classic Ninja Turtles.
Yeah, kind of way.
Yeah. But he looks great. And then Jenny looks amazing. She's got, looks like, four sets of interchangeable faces. And then a bunch of, like, plasma blasts that you can put on her in a couple of different hands, it looks like. So, they all look really great. I mean, the paint masters are beautiful. It's a shame that we won't get a chromed First Mate Jenny, because the toy was originally supposed to come out chrome.
Yeah, well, you can buy that. Apparently there's some kind of liquid chrome.
Chrome pins, everybody's... All the Joe people are talking about, which apparently work really well.
Sure those are good for the environment.
Yeah, but Jenny's got three different faces, three sets of hands. One of the sets has plasma blasts, and then she's got those connectable plasma blasts that can clip onto her hands.
Yeah, Hasbro packages those. Something similar to those with a bunch of their legends.
Yeah, their magic using legends. I can't wait for these. I'm not sure what the release date on these is.
I have no idea. Now, is this something you're going to get?
I don't know. Pre-orders begin on June 1st.
Because I hate to break it to you, buddy. I love Boss Fight, but I'm not that big a fan of Bucky O'Hare.
Oh, I know. It depends on what they run the figures price-wise at. Like, it depends on what they price out at that I might pre-order Bucky and Jenny. I know, we'll have to wait and see, though. I'm curious to see what they do yet. Hot Toys showed off their first 1/6 scale collectible for Disney's latest live-action feature, Beauty and the Beast.
Is that a picture of the toy?
That is a picture of the toy.
Damn, they are talented.
Yes. Although people have been bitching a lot about this face sculpt on her. They've been saying it's not great. I think it looks good.
I had to ask if it was the toy or the actress.
Yeah, because it very much looks like Emma Watson.
It looks like a person. Yeah. You know, Emma's grown up a little bit, and her hair is different than I think of her as Hermione. But
right.
Like, that looks like a photograph of a human being.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, it's pretty nice looking. I mean, they've done a good job with Emma Watson's face. The Mattel dolls did not do a good job with Emma Watson's face.
No, well, there's a shot. Well, they were Mattel dolls.
Right. The Hot Toys doll, though, comes in the classic ballroom dress. She comes with a necklace. She comes with Chip, Mrs. Potts, Lumiere, Cogsworth, and the Feather Duster. I can never think of her name.
I don't know.
As well as a rose she can hold, Also, the Beast's Magical Rose under the dome. Three sets of hands, a display base, rooted hair. So, yeah, it looks really nice.
All right. Now, not to throw you off your little schedule
no,
here.
No, no, yes, yes, yes.
But I want to talk to you about something. Because I saw this come up sort of on Disney's whole live action milking their catalog.
Right, right.
They've announced.
We'll talk about it here in a little bit.
Okay. Because then we can wait till then. But they've announced the casting for Timon and Pumbaa.
Oh yes,
for the live action Lion King.
Yes,
I have to be very careful in this part because I have to avoid curse words.
Yes,
but what the hell? Like, it's just going to be a cartoon anyway. With, like, there are no humans in the Lion King.
Right, it's all going to be CGI.
It's a cartoon anyway.
Yeah.
It is the most pointless expenditure of money in the history of cinema.
I don't disagree with you.
I mean, unless you incorporate some of the stuff that maybe is in the Broadway play that isn't from the original cartoon, which is like the only, like, it's not going to be live action.
Right.
It's crazy. It's madness.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's stupid. Just re-release the film.
Plumet is the Feather Duster's name.
Sure.
Yes, thank you. Back to Hot Toys' Beauty and the Beast.
I'm sorry, I thought you were kind of moving on from the Beauty and the
Beast. No, I was getting ready to, but now I saw her name down at the bottom, and that helped me. Alien Day, they brought out, NECA brought out a exclusive Kenner tribute of Vasquez.
Sure, that's sitting in the back of our Toys R Us.
Yeah, probably.
Assuming we got it at all.
Of course, she comes in packaging that mimics the classic Kenner packaging for the Aliens line.
Yeah.
They did
Ripley last year.
Yes, they did Ripley last year. So we get Vasquez this year. Really nice. Looks like she's got a removable knife. She's got her big... she's got a couple of guns.
I'm sure if it's like Ripley, it's basically the Vasquez figure.
Yes.
Just in the color scheme.
Yes,
yeah.
Just painted Kenner-wise.
And the problem I have with that is most people didn't get that version of Vasquez.
Right.
I think it was only released overseas. I think the version that most people got was the one that came out through KB.
The two-pack
mm-hmm. with the Night Cougar Predator, or Night Cougar Alien.
Yes.
Where she's actually in her more appropriate movie colors.
Attire, yeah. Yep.
So I think they whiffed that one a little.
Yeah, they did. There was a lot of Aliens Day stuff, but I don't want to talk about the Alien Day stuff.
It was stupid.
A lot of it was dumb. It's like they...
It's 426, and the name of the planet was LV-426. That's them trying to force it.
Your post today might have been the greatest thing I saw with that, because you, for you being a nerd yourself, was just like, nerds!
There's such a thing as trying too hard.
Yes.
I mean,
Star Wars has a day, why can't Aliens have a day?
Because it's not that big a cultural thing. It's a horror thing.
Yes.
Star Wars is a whole thing. The Alien movies are all individual points on a map.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Does that
make sense?
No, it does.
I agree. Where Star Wars is a whole epic thing. It's like there's Alien, and then some people just consider Alien to be a thing.
Yes.
And then there's Aliens, and some people consider that to
just be a thing.
Well, you acknowledge the first one, but... And then, you know, like, Blomkamp was gonna, like, cut out 3 and 4.
Right.
Which is never gonna happen. And then you've got the Prometheuses, and then you've got the Aliens versus Predator, and then... Each one is its own little point on a map. It's not like a whole... No matter how much they try, it doesn't ever feel like a cohesive universe. It feels like each thing is a unique individual thing.
Yes.
Which is not necessarily a bad thing, but I also don't think it's the basis to have a day to celebrate.
No, it's not.
And it's just like, I mean, it's nice to have cultural primacy in nerddom, but I also think it brings out our worst characteristics as nerds.
I agree. Back to Hot Toys for a second with Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 less than a week away. They announced a 1-to-1 scale life-size collectible figure of Baby Groot. And it might be the most adorable thing I've ever seen in my life.
It's cute.
He comes with the Ravager's outfit, two pairs of interchangeable hands, including a pair of extending attacking hands with embedded wires, allowing a variety of poses. He'll be 26 centimeters tall. He's pretty adorable. A couple of different faces. I want one.
Yeah, how much does it run?
Surprisingly, let's see. Do they have the link for the
I don't pre-order? Know.
I want to say that they do. Toys Baby Groot.
Apparently they didn't.
Apparently not. Oh, okay.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I've noticed... These websites are like, you can get this at Big Bad Toy Store. And then you click on Big Bad Toy Store and it's like, no, it's not up yet.
$189.99.
That is not that surprising.
No, but it's actually not terribly expensive either.
Okay.
Well, for a life-size figure.
Of a tiny little character.
Well, yeah.
He's smaller than a raccoon. He's like half the size of a raccoon.
Yeah, I know. But still, he'd be fun to...
Apparently, you've got money to burn.
No, no, I don't.
Yeah, it's funny how $189 suddenly goes from, that's completely reasonable, to, oh, well, when it's my $189, oh, now it's a little dear.
Oh, they're there, Dave. They're there.
It's not my money, man.
We got a new, this is for all my bronies out there. Viz Media is teaming up with Hasbro to print a unique new art book, The Art of My Little Pony, the movie, which will be published in print and digital under license from Hasbro, will debut at retail and online platforms on August 29th. The film comes out October 6th in theaters nationwide. So we'll get a lot of, yes. In Hasbro's My Little Pony, the movie, a new dark force threatens Ponyville and the main six, Sparkle, Applejack, Rainbow Dash, Pinkie Pie, Fluttershy, and Rarity, as they embark on an unforgettable journey beyond Equestria, where they meet new friends and face exciting challenges on a quest to use the magic of friendship to save their home. Dun, dun, dun. Yay, My Little Pony, My Little Pony. I love you so. Come on, Dave, you'll go see the My Little Pony, the movie with me, won't you?
No, that's a Carrie movie.
Yeah, right. Carrie's not going to go see that. Sad news for Star Wars fans.
You got Power Rangers.
No one died. I did get Power Rangers. And you're going to get Aliens, so I'm due after
Aliens. I'm not even necessarily going to hold you to that, man. If you don't want to go to that, that's fine.
So, no one died, technically.
Hooray!
But Kathleen Kennedy has basically confirmed that we will never see the despecialized original trilogy.
Did she say never? I mean, I know that they don't have any plans to do it right now.
Here is what Slash Film says.
I'm gonna read this. She's not going to be in charge of Lucasfilm forever.
I'm going to read this verbatim. Due to issues with the rights to the original Star Wars trilogy, as well as the supposed difficulty of getting the original versions in a format that can easily be converted to a high-definition video format, it might be a lost cause. But even if there was the possibility of making it happen, Lucasfilm president Kathleen Kennedy seems to indicate that she doesn't want to mess with what George Lucas has already done to the original Star Wars trilogy.
Okay, and again, that's... So long as she's in charge, that's fine. You know, Disney didn't spend $4 billion for nothing.
She basically said during an interview during Star Wars Celebration... the interviewer finally clarified that he's asking about whether the final cut that George Lucas left fans with could be altered over time. Again, if she basically said he asked a simple question in a really poor roundabout way, but basically she says, "I haven't touched those; those will always remain his." So I don't.
That's okay. First of all, that doesn't answer the question at all. No. That's a stupid non-story if that's what she said. And what she's saying is, yeah, we won't alter the movie further. Changing it back to the way it was is not altering the movie further. That's a completely different thing.
Right.
That's stupid. That's what this whole story's about.
That's what it's all about.
That's stupid.
I know.
And especially because like, I can understand, you know, I said this on a friend's Facebook page, like, I can understand her not wanting to do it out of respect for George.
Right.
But at the same time, like, I mean, Spielberg was fine with them releasing E.T. both versions.
Yes.
And in fact, I think he kind of, like, came around, like, the original version was probably better and he probably shouldn't have done that.
Yes.
Like,
because he took all the guns out.
And took all the guns out, put walkie-talkies in, removed penis breath, which was said in E.T., the most beloved family film of all time. Yep. So it's a completely family-friendly thing to say. Penis breath.
There was a lot of family-friendlies in there.
I started to stutter. My thoughts race faster than my mouth is capable of forming words. I was just happy that I get to say penis breath on
penis
a,
breath.
On yes. Family Friendly.
Family Friendly. Hey, it was in E.T.
It was in E.T.
It was rated PG.
E.T. is the most beloved family film of all time. That's just right. Saying.
That's right.
Penis breath.
Dave knows what he's talking about.
So anyway, I got away with being dirty, so I forgot where I was. No, but point being, like, you could do, like, the special editions and the original editions.
Right.
Like, I can't imagine, like, the only thing is, like, the rights thing would probably be the big thing, because Fox technically owns the first film.
Yes.
So I could see them maybe having issues with that, but even then, like, there's just too much money to be made.
I agree.
Those things would sell, like, especially if you do it a cheesy both versions, charge, three times the price.
Yep.
You know that would be like an instant hot seller.
Yes, I agree. Back to Disney live action. Okay. One of the many films in development is a film called Christopher Robin, which is a live action Winnie the Pooh sequel that follows an adult version of Pooh's best friend. And apparently they've now hired Ewan McGregor to play the title character.
Okay.
Yes. Ewan McGregor is in talks to star in the film, which focuses on a grown-up version of Christopher Robin, who has lost his sense of imagination and become an intense workaholic as his home life gets worse.
So it's Hook.
Yes, kind of. As his home life gets worse, Pooh comes back into his life and needs Christopher Robin's help to find his old friends again. Mark Forster, who directed Quantum of Solace and Finding Neverland, is the director. And it sounds like...
The Good Bond movie.
Yes, the Good Bond movie.
Yeah, I'm being sarcastic. Everyone hated Quantum of Solace.
Oh, boo. That's one of those live-action Disney movies that actually interests me, because I like that they're not just taking the normal stance they've taken and just redoing the animated feature as a live-action movie.
They've only done that, like, what, once? They did Snow White and the Huntsman. Well, no, they did Maleficent.
No, they didn't do Snow White and the Huntsman. They did
Maleficent.
They did Maleficent. They did Cinderella. Which was a different approach. Cinderella was a different, a little bit of a different approach. Beauty and the Beast is pretty much the movie.
Beauty and the Beast was a shot-for-shot remake.
Little Mermaid apparently is supposed to be pretty much close to what the animated feature was.
I was going
to
ask if they were doing that.
Mulan apparently is going to be a musical.
Well, the important thing there, which I'm sure we'll get to, is the McDonald's product tie-in for that movie. That's what's critical on Mulan.
Yes. We have a question about that later, and we'll get back to that eventually. Apparently, speaking of Guardians of the Galaxy 2...
Oh, I can confirm that the Dorito bags have Guardians on them, because I was just at Schnucks.
Yes. So...
Oh, I didn't see the brown one. I didn't look too hard.
Yes, the Guardians of the Galaxy 2 Dorito bags actually has a built-in cassette tape deck... inspired player that plays the full soundtrack.
Are you serious?
You can listen to all 14 songs of the soundtrack through this Doritos bag. And apparently, because Doritos wants to make this as convenient as possible, the bag can apparently be recharged, so you can use the bag to listen to the soundtrack over and over again.
I didn't see that.
Well,
I saw it just had a picture of Peter Quill on it.
Yeah.
That's crazy, man. How much am I paying for a bag of Doritos?
If you want to get your hands on one of these limited edition Doritos in this musical bag, they'll be available for consumer purchase on April 28th, only on Amazon.com/Doritos, while supplies last.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't think that was going to be something that got released. Ooh.
No. But there's an interesting Doritos cross promotion that only appears in Australia. It's a limited edition flavor called Supernova.
Foreigners.
Yes, the corn chips are space green with a flavor described as a zesty blast of lime dusted with volcanic black pepper.
Ew.
Yes, so they will not be available in the States, but they are being reviewed online by some Australians, so those are only available in Australia.
That doesn't sound good at all.
No. And then speaking of Guardians, again...
Sure, why not?
We're nearing the opening of the Disneyland theme park ride, Guardians of the Galaxy Mission Breakout, which basically retrofit over Twilight Zone's old tower, the old Tower of Terror in Disney California Adventure Park. So it's very interesting. People have really complained about the exterior of this building because it's fugly looking. There's a lot of spires and weird things moving, and it's just, it's kind of gaudy looking. So they've been, the longtime Disneyland fans have been mocking the ugly look of the exterior of the Tower of Terror, and the Imagineering creator, director Danny Handke says the building embodies the spirit of the Collector, a villain in the movie. It's weird, it's bold, it's grandiose, and it's arrogant like the character. At night, the lights on the Collector's Fortress will pulsate.
So the Collector's back in the movie?
He's in the ride. Benicio del Toro Yes. So here's the story. The Guardians are being held captive in cells at the top of the tower, suspended over an isolated location that visitors to the tower can see only by riding a special gantry up to the tower's highest levels. All the pipes on the exterior of the building are helping to power a massive generator that keeps the Guardians from escaping. Handke explained that the collector harnesses the organic matter that they mined on Nowhere through these pipes, which power the giant generator that keeps every cell and cage in the collection locked and secured. The queue is going to be filled with many Easter eggs. Basically, the premise is that the Collector, played by Benicio del Toro, has captured the Guardians of the Galaxy and opened up his fortress for tours to show off his new acquisitions to the people of Earth. This is why he chose to build the fortress at Disneyland Resort, so that many Terrans will be able to see his prized possessions. The ride's queue will bring visitors through the Collector's Museum, filled with artifacts from the movies, comic books, television shows, like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and even the theme park world. In total, there are 2,200 props on display throughout the ride, enough to keep Disney visitors searching for Easter eggs for years, and the collection in the lobby will often change. As for what you'll see, Slash has heard that Cosmo the Space Dog is on display, and the queue features an enormous gold-plated statue of the Collector himself in total villain mode. Guests will notice alien text throughout the facility that they can decipher and help unearth clues to other reasons why the Collector is here, with basically Imagineering borrowing ideas from their past on the Indiana Jones Adventure ride. The pre-show is where you visit the Collector's office, and that's where you discover that Rocket has escaped, and he enlists the help of the visitors to help his fellow Guardians escape. So park guests will then be escorted through a maintenance area to the gantry to help Rocket and the team escape. The entire queue features new original music by Guardians of the Galaxy composer Tyler Bates. The attraction will feature six different experiences, which will be random, much like Disney's popular Star Tours: The Adventure Continues. The randomization includes the music that plays during the freefall ride, the show scene that will play during it, and a different ride style. And each version of the ride will be accompanied by classic rock song from the 60s, 70s, and 80s, including Born to Be Wild by Steppenwolf, I Want You Back by Jackson 5, Hit Me With Your Best Shot by Pat Benatar, We Want the Funk by Parliament, Burnin' Love by Elvis Presley, and Free Ride by Edgar Winter. Walt Disney Imagineering says they used Star-Lord's awesome mix as a starting point, but ended up testing out 100 different songs to find the right fit. Instead of a slower start, the ride begins with a high-impact zoom to the top. Rocket has a plan to blow the fortress's power generator to free the Guardians, but when power is cut off to the Collector's Fortress and the gantry dies, resulting in the ride's signature plummet. As the emergency power kicks back in, guests will see one of six different show segments. The segments are titled internally Escape, a Basilisk Attack, Drax vs. Beast, Anti-Gravity, Quill vs. Orlone, and Drones. Very interesting stuff.
Oh, and apparently, not found.
Apparently page two of that story is not there. Oh, there it is. Okay. I was like, where is it? All the cast members will be in character as Tivon's employees.
Tivon being the Collector.
Yes, being the Collector. Our cast members will appear to be excited when visitors first enter, but they're walking on eggshells because they know they're being watched by the Collector. The Collector staff will hint that they really want to help the Guardians escape. So, and of course, you exit through a gift shop.
Good.
So, yes. And apparently there's, of course, rumors of a Marvel Land, and there's a great piece of production art, pre-viz art of Ant-Man attacking all these weird drones. Now, I am a little excited for this Guardians of the Galaxy ride. I think it's very interesting. I know it doesn't open until May 27th, so the film will have been playing for some time. It looks like if you're an annual pass holder at Disneyland, You'll get to ride the ride on May 23rd and May 24th. If you're a Disneyland Resort cast member, they preview the ride on the 21st and 22nd. There's a press party for Guardians of the Galaxy and Summer of Heroes event on 25th. There's a press event on the 26th for the same thing. And then the Guardians officially opens for all park guests on May 27th. So it should be a very interesting summer for Disneyland people and for Marvel fans. For anyone who has seen M. Night Shyamalan and Ding Dongs...
Pretty sure that's not his name.
No, it's not, but I like saying it that way. For anyone who has seen... what is the name of his
Split?
Last name? Split, thank you. I was like, I wanted to say Shift, and I'm like, that's not right. For anyone who has seen Split, there is a connection to another Shyamalan film that is made at the very end of that movie that turns out it's in the same universe as an actual beloved M. Night Shyamalan film about superheroes.
Science.
Called Unbreakable.
Oh.
Spoiler alert. Well, Universal Pictures is releasing the next film, M. Night's next film, an Unbreakable sequel titled Glass, on January 18th, 2019. And then M. Night Shyamalan, during a stream of updates to Twitter this morning, and I'll read this verbatim, he said, "Okay, here we go. Finished the new script. It's taken 17 years, but I can finally answer the number one question I get. Are you making an effing sequel to Unbreakable or what? My new film is the sequel to Unbreakable and Split. It was always my dream to have both films collide in this third film. The iconic Bruce Willis will return as David Dunn. The incomparable Samuel Jackson will return as Elijah Price, Mr. Glass. James McAvoy's returning as Kevin Wendell Crumb, Patricia, Dennis, Hedwig, Barry, Jade, Orwell, the Beast, Henrik, Norma, Paul, and the Prodigy.
Just the Beast at the end.
Yes.
Spoiler alert.
Anya Taylor-Joy will return as Casey Cook. Glass will be released by Universal on January 18th, 2019. And that, to me, is really cool. Do you remember, how long is it, have you seen Unbreakable in a while?
No.
Did you ever see Unbreakable?
No.
You've never seen Unbreakable?
Yes.
Oh my God. I need to let you borrow it so you can take it home and watch it. Unbreakable might be one of the most, at the time when it was released, it was... one of it was an amazing superhero movie, but it was so subtle in the fact that they never kind of reveal how Bruce Willis gets these powers, how he's unbreakable, you know.
Well, he's had them his whole life. He's never been sick.
Yeah, he's never been sick. He can't be hurt. He can't break bones.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Samuel Jackson's character,
Mr. Glass,
is fragile. His bones break.
Yeah.
You know, he's a comic book collector. It's all very, very neatly intertwined, and it's a really great movie.
Well, and apparently it famously kind of poops the bed at the end, because it's just like, and then the story was, like literally there's a caption on the screen that goes, and then the bad guy was captured and put in jail. The end.
Well.
The bad guy who was behind everything.
Yes and no. They capture him at the end.
I know, but it's like really kind of glossed over.
It's very interesting. I'm excited to see a sequel to Unbreakable after all these years, and I think it's fascinating that we got there
via this other
Split.
Film. Yeah,
via Split, which ties into that universe. And I think it's a marvelous idea that sounds like Mr. Glass is somehow controlling the Beast, and McAvoy's character is, you know, they're just going to be this duo that's unstoppable.
Maybe. My concern is it's going to be another... that Glass will be another Hannibal Lecter.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that he's in prison and Dennis comes. I need your help because you're the comic book guy and there's an actual comic book supervillain.
Yeah.
I need your help to stop this guy.
Yep. And then Glass turns on him. Wrong.
Well, of course Glass screws him over. what villains do?
True. I know we talked...
Ain't you ever seen Red Dragon / Manhunter?
That's true. I know we talked about, did we talk about Fate of the Furious last week and how it's...
I think we mentioned that it made a lot of money. It
continues to make a crap ton of money. It's made $169 million in the States and dang near $800 million foreign. Which just goes to show, like you said last week, this kind of film is a much easier sell overseas than most of...
Action films are,
yes,
yeah.
Action films are usually a much easier sell.
Action films are an easier sell. Comedies are a horrible sell.
Yeah,
overseas.
Comedies are not easy to sell.
And then sort of talky period dramas are kind of the kiss of death.
Yeah.
That's why almost everything is kind of a loud, obnoxious, you know, Michael Bay kind of movie these days.
But Fast 8, The Fate of the Furious, has made $914 million in 2 weeks, which is a huge deal. It's now, people who are sick of the Fast and Furious franchise, which I know there's many of them out there, you'll be pleased to know that they're only going to do two more films.
Because I knew they were doing F9, because I was talking about F9. Yes. But just for you to go, if you hate these movies, good news, there's only two more.
That's right. they're going to do...
That's not really good news.
They've said the film series is a 10... They're going 10 films and they're done.
Okay.
So, they got two more movies to wrap up their stories.
Yeah, I'm sure it's a super complicated, deep narrative.
Actually, it is. Like, if you start... Well, no, okay. It's not the narrative. The timeline of all these films is very deep-rooted.
But even that, like, after, like, the third or fourth film, didn't it kind of straighten out?
A little bit, but you're still, like, playing in the past. I don't know. It's a big mess, dude. Right. It's
again, as with Unbreakable, I've never seen... The only Fast and Furious movie I've ever seen, I think, was... I was here. We were hanging out. And I think it was the second one? Maybe the third one?
Might have been the third one.
And we watched, like, the opening sequence of it. And I was a little interested in it, because, like, the whole thing was all the racers had, like, different colored cars. And then they had, like, outfits that matched the cars.
Yeah.
And I'm like, this is like a damn comic book movie, man.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. Well, wait till we answer some fan questions.
Well, I wanted to...
Oh, go ahead. Yes, no.
I did have something that I have to... Like, if this was a radio show, at this point, we would have this be a very rare segment called Jason Was Right. We'd play the clip from Ghostbusters where it's like, cats and dogs living together, mass hysteria. So, just a little thing to acknowledge that, you know, Jason does sometimes know what he's talking about. You told me last year, I think... It's been a really long time that DC Direct was canceling all of its Batman versus Superman merchandise.
Yes.
That it was, and I was kind of like...
Several months ago.
Yeah, it was a long time ago. Yeah. And my thing was, okay, it's not that I didn't believe you, but I had a Wonder Woman figure on order from Big Bad Toy Store.
Right.
And I'm like, well, you know, they would cancel. You know, I would get some kind of acknowledgement that was canceled. Well, yesterday, I got an email, like all these months later, after you told me that was happening... I got the email from Big Bad Toy Store that it was being canceled.
Yep.
So you were right about something.
Yay! I like being right.
I know.
It's fun.
I give you enough static. you deserve to be acknowledged when you pull it off.
Yay for me. I'm gonna milk that for a minute.
It's okay.
It's a great feeling to be right.
Technically, all you did was read something.
I know. Sometimes I do know what I'm talking about, though.
Well, I mean, it was just like, I was just like, okay, it's not that I didn't necessarily believe you, it was just like they didn't cancel the thing.
Yes.
And they didn't cancel it for months.
And then they canceled the thing, and you're like,
finally canceled the thing, so I guess you were in fact right.
Hooray! our friend James DeQuanis says, Duvall, favorite bad 90s toy line, James
Bond Jr. Your friend, James.
Apparently. James Bond Jr., Terminator, etc. Dave, do you have a favorite bad 90s toy line?
I wasn't asked.
Okay, I'll ask you. David, do you have a favorite bad 90s toy line?
Probably, like, maybe Congo?
I say it's going to be Congo or Robin Hood.
No, it's Congo.
Is it Congo?
It's Congo.
Technically...
First of all, Robin Hood. I love Robin Hood, especially when it was called Star Wars and Superpowers. So...
True. Congo's a fun one. Congo's pretty terrible.
I like the apes.
Yeah, Dave does like the apes.
They're crappy as hell, but I love them.
My favorite 90s bad toy line would probably have to be the Terminator line. Because there's... because it's some of it's really cool, and then they started repainting everything, and then you get these ridiculous Kenner repaints, and all you have to do is just clap your hands and go, Kenner was so special. I loved them so much. Kenner liked to repaint everything.
They still do.
Well,
Hasbro still does. Yeah,
Hasbro's like, Kenner did that, right? Let's do that.
Well, because molds are expensive, and so that's how you save on money.
That's true. Chris Sheet says, any line you were really excited about, but then was meh once you got it in hand?
Oh, what was it called? The DC one. When Mattel first kind of got the... Early on, Mattel got the like the 3¾-inch one.
Oh.
Multiverse?
No, it wasn't Multiverse. Infinite Heroes.
Infinite Heroes.
Yes. Well, they were like, hey, we're going to take these little tiny 4-inch figures and put no articulation in them.
Yeah.
And we're make just, them all crappy.
We're going to make them all look like garbage.
Even the Marvel Legends are all, like, at the time, even though all the Marvel Universe ones are completely poseable.
I think it predated the Marvel ones just a little bit.
Marvel Universe was out.
Yeah, and it was right around that time.
Yeah. I remember when they came out and you bought a bunch and then you stopped.
I bought a few.
You bought a few and then
I
you
bought,
stopped.
I bought like Green Arrow. Because
you were like, these are crap.
Because then the other thing was their character selection was really weird early on. Like, because they didn't lead with like Batman and Superman. They led with like, you know, Guy Gardner.
Manhunter.
And the weaponers are Quark. Yeah. And, you know, like all these weird, like, weird kind of second rate characters.
Yeah. And it's like, at the time we were at PCN, Dirt bought
a ton of those.
Crap ton of them. And he loved the heck out of those. And the rest of us are scratching our heads going, those are horrible figures, man.
Yeah.
And I don't know if he just loved them despite us or what, but he bought everything he could find and then some. And they're, even to this day, they're still some of the worst toys Mattel's ever put out.
Yeah, they're pretty crummy.
Yeah, and then they decided to add... Did they decide to add elbow and knee articulation, and by then it was too late?
Yeah, they got... I know they had knee articulation. I can't remember if they... It might just be the ones I have don't have the elbow. No, some have elbows, I think.
And by then, everybody was like, these are still awful. It doesn't matter what you do.
And I just remember the Gorilla Grodd's the most disappointing...
piece of plastic.
And it's frustrating, because then they did Monsieur Mala, who was another gorilla.
Yes.
And he looks fantastic.
Yeah.
Like, for that line, he actually looks really good. But Grodd's just sad.
Yeah.
He looks like Judy from Dr. McNerda.
The Four Horsemen Power Lords figures.
Okay.
For me. I was really excited about those.
Well, that's another one where mold reusage became a thing.
I was really excited about those. They kept releasing, like, soldiers and stuff and they finally announced the fan club, and I spent $100 to sign up for the fan club so I could get the first set of figures. And then they came, and I hung them on a wall and never opened them because I was like, I don't even like these anymore. And then they never released any of the other figures they promised.
Yeah.
Which makes me want to sell the ones I have because I'm like, I've got the vintage ones. I don't need these. I'm like, they're really not that great. Like, they were labeled as GLaDOS compatible, but they're not really GLaDOS compatible because the system, like the parts are, I don't know, it's all weird, but
yeah.
I was not happy with any of it that I had. I think I sold you.
You sold me the soldiers.
I sold you the soldiers.
The human soldiers.
Yeah. Because you were like, well, I kind of want the soldiers. It's like, they're yours, dude.
I kind of wanted the line. You wouldn't sell me the ones that you're getting rid of now.
Yeah. Well, not
so
at the time.
I went and got them off of eBay, so you're on your own.
Yeah, that's all right. Yeah. Kami Clark says, hey guys, what's new, eh?
Hoosier.
Hoosier. What do you think? Hold on, let me get that. Come on, there we go.
Okay.
What do you think of the Rick and Morty sauce being sold for $10,000 on eBay? That's nuts. He's talking about the
Moulin Chiquan sauce.
Chiquan sauce.
That is nuts.
Yeah, it is crazy. And it's McDonald's collectors. It's weird to think that people still have. I wouldn't keep sealed food in a collection.
No, I wouldn't either.
And that sauce is not any good anymore.
No.
So $10,000 is not worth it. It's just people going, that's a thing! I'm going to try to make a fortune!
Yeah, basically. And, I mean, I'm curious what it tastes like. Although, I assume it tastes like... I assume you could get Szechuan sauce somewhere else.
Yeah, probably.
And it probably you know, it's like barbecue or sweet and sour. I mean, you know.
Probably like sweet and sour.
It's probably not a mysterious thing. You can get it. Speaking of which,
yes,
just random stream of consciousness. I finally saw The Founder.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
What'd you think of it?
I have mixed feelings.
Because it's on Netflix now, right?
Well, no, I rented it off of cable.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, on demand. So like, it's $5. I'm not doing anything. I liked it. I thought Keaton's performance was really good. I thought as the film went on, it got very Cliff Notes-y. So it just sort of like hit parts, but didn't really explain things very well. Like the crucial moment where he finds out, you know, where someone explains, you know, and it's in the trailers, you know, you should be owning the land, not the things.
Right.
Like,
it's what's his face from The Office that plays that role.
Sure.
I can't think of
his name. I don't know who the guy is. Yeah. But point being, like, that happens because it's kind of interesting. I mean, like, a lot of the behind the scenes stuff is interesting. I don't know how true it all is, but, you know, it's supposedly a true story. But, yeah. Like, it all boils down to milkshakes. Like, the franchises are doing well.
Yes.
But they're losing huge amounts of money because they have to run the freezers to keep the ice cream
right
frozen, and that's bankrupting them. And he's literally, like, you know, at the bank. When he meets this guy, he's at the bank trying to get an extension on his mortgage. And the thing is, there's this, like, prepackaged dehydrated milkshake mix that, you know, tastes just as good.
Yeah.
And the McDonald's won't let him use it.
Right, the brothers wouldn't let him use it.
The brothers wouldn't let him use it.
We're all natural. We use
Yeah, because he had signed this deal with them that they control literally everything that goes on in the restaurant.
Yes.
And early on, that's a big issue because they won't let him change the plans for the restaurant. Even though they're in San Bernardino, Southern California.
Yeah.
He's trying to open up a restaurant in Northern Illinois, and he's like, I have to have a basement, I have to have a furnace.
Right.
And they're like, we'll think about it.
Yeah.
He's like, no, I have to have... I'm going to have a restaurant in Illinois. I have to have a furnace.
Right.
So there was there's a source of tension there. But, like, so, like I said, he's trying to get an extension on the mortgage, and he runs into this other guy who explains the whole, you know, you need to own the land, not the restaurants.
Yeah.
Then the franchisees pay you.
Yep.
And that's all really interesting, but they never explain how, you know, he goes from not having any money to suddenly implementing this plan, which presumably because it's buying a lot of real estate, would require vast amounts of money.
Right.
So that was a little kind of, like, glossed over. And it's the movie itself doesn't seem to know how it feels about Ray Kroc.
Yeah, that's the thing I noticed, too. It's like they portray...
Because it starts out he's very sympathetic.
Yes.
And likable.
During the course of the film, he becomes
a dickbag.
Yeah, he becomes very much controlling, very much... He's very much on the path to destroying the McDonald brothers.
Well, and it feels malicious at the end.
Yeah, it does. It very much does. And I'm sure that's how it kind of played out in real life, too.
Yeah.
The fact that by then, he owned the McDonald's. He basically owned the McDonald's name.
Yeah. Well, he buys it out from under them.
Yeah.
But then he, like, he screws them over. And it's like that was the one point I almost yelled at the TV. Because he buys them out. And their terms are a bunch of money. They get to keep their restaurant in San Bernardino, and then they get 1% of the profits for the rest of the forever.
Yes.
And he gives them the money. They can keep the restaurant, but they can't keep the name.
Right.
Which is, like, heartbreaking, because later on you see them tearing down the sign, and they have to, you know. And then the third thing, he's like, well, my lawyers won't let me put that in the contract, but you have my word. And I'm like, what is wrong with you people? Yeah. How stupid are you?
And then the final nail in the coffin for them is the fact that he builds a restaurant right across the street.
Like, literally the next scene is, you know, he's building a McDonald's right across the street from them. I'm like, that is just mean. That is just being a dick.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was weird because it's like, you like, because it starts out, again, he's very sympathetic. There's that moment where he's building the first one of his. He's like, please let this work. Please let me be right.
Right.
And it's like, you feel for him. And then just suddenly, somewhere along the way, he just has his turn where he's just like a jerk.
Yeah. Well, he finally gets fed up with the McDonald brothers and dealing with them.
But they're not even, they're frustrating, but they're not like, it's not malicious. It's not that they're bad. And
he just can't get them to see things his way.
I know.
And instead of seeing things his way, he just does it anyway and finds ways around it.
Yeah.
Which does nothing but irritate the brothers and... It is a very interesting film, and it's very good, but yeah, it does portray Ray Kroc as a very manipulative...
Oh, especially at the end, because he...
Very evil, conniving bastard.
Yeah. I mean, there's this whole thing about, like, I guess his second wife, and I knew that was going to be... Because, you know, he sees her at the piano bar, and, like, they linger on that way too long, and then she introduces herself, and I'm like, okay, clearly he's going to end up with his woman,
because
they're making too much of a big deal.
Yeah.
But then they never actually do that. Like she shows up once or twice... But there's never that, and then just out of the blue, he wants a divorce from his wife.
Yeah,
and then the final scene in the movie, she's his wife.
Yeah,
the other lady is his wife.
Yeah,
like it's weird. Like there's like, you know,
there's a disconnect somewhere where they just
it's like there's like a whole other hour of movie on the floor somewhere. You know, so I was thinking about this on the way over. It's like, you know, yeah, okay, Gandhi is like 4 hours long, but they. We're trying to, you know,
right.
Whereas this one, that it really cut down everything. So it was still. I thought his performance was great. But it was
well,
just...
Well, I thought
it was,
the two guys that played the brothers were
they
magnificent.
Were good. Well, Nick Offerman was basically playing...
Ron Swanson.
Ron Swanson.
Yeah.
Like a slightly nicer Ron Swanson.
Basically, yes. But he was really good at it, too.
He was really good. And I love that early sequence where they're telling their story. At the restaurant, they're telling their whole history of how they came up with McDonald's. That was great.
Yeah. It's a fun movie, but yeah, there is some... It leaves some stuff to be questioned.
It was frustrating.
Yeah. Kim High is back to Camus.
Oh, I'm sorry,
Camus. That's all right. My other question is, favorite movie, old or new, that if they made a toy line for that has yet to be done today, would you buy the whole line? Thanks, and keep up the good work.
We've had this question before, and the problem is, like, what movie hasn't had a toy line? I mean, I'm still waiting for a really great 4-inch Aliens toy line.
Yeah.
Sorry, Haya. And technically, your stuff from the video game anyway.
I would have killed back in the day for a decent toy line based on the Casper movie.
Of course you would.
Yes. Yeah, that's the hard part, is that pretty much everything at this point in time has had some kind of toy made for it.
I mean, I'd like to see Jurassic Park revisited.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
Although, you know, there's this guy that's doing the Kickstarters. I mean, he started with the Raptors, which, like, pfft. But now he's moving on to the Ceratopsians, and maybe he'll get to some of the good...
Decent ones.
Yeah, because it's a 118 scale line. It's just that he started with the Raptors or something.
Like, Dave's like, I want those.
Give me the big carnosaurs. Give me the sauropods, dude. Yeah, that'll cost a fortune.
Yes.
I'd buy them, though.
Yeah.
Give me a 118 scale brachiosaur. I will buy it.
Dave will buy that stuff.
I will buy that in a heartbeat.
In a heartbeat. David Williams says, what is the most important thing to know about collecting toys? Something you wish you knew when you started out?
Don't.
David, don't.
Don't.
The most important thing to know about collecting... Well, the most important thing to know about any hobby is to at least do your research and know what's out there. And with toys, yes, there's a lot, but... If you're focused on just action figures, we talked about it before, hunt down the Tomart's Encyclopedia of Action Figures, Volumes 1, 2, and 3. They're a wealth of knowledge up to 94, 95.
Something like that. Yeah, like mid-90s.
Especially if you're collecting vintage toys from the 90s back. It's a wealth of knowledge, just about every action figure line made.
Basically, get your hands on any kind of guidebook like that you can.
Yes. You know, Dave and I talk about, we kind of came up in this hobby before really the advent of the internet, for the most part. The internet was here.
I got my first modem because...
To play Star Wars Galaxies, right?
No.
No?
No.
No.
No. I got my first modem because a friend of mine was like, did you know that they're doing... This is Power of the Force 2.
Right.
That they're doing this mail-away Han Solo thing from Fruit Loops. I'm like, no. How'd you know about that? And he's like, I got it offline. I'm like... I must be online.
What
no,
is
I
know, this I online? Know, and I must
know,
have
I know,
it.
I knew what modems were because right. I had friends in college that had them.
Yeah.
You know, but like I was like, ooh, I got to get hooked up to this thing so I know what's going on.
See, I remember the early days of like 90, 94, 95, my junior, senior year, especially 94.
Yeah, 95 is when I, you know.
94 is when Sailor Moon premiered on American television on Fox Kids Club. Well, it was syndicated,
basically.
Well,
that would explain why I never saw it, because, I mean, that was the year after I graduated college.
Yeah, and it was, you know, it was on early, and I remember myself...
I only watched Beast Wars.
Myself, my friend Aaron Winking, and my buddy Christian Gosnell were huge into that show in an anime period, and we were using the internet because at Vocational, because they had to have internet at the time for radio TV stuff. It was very, you know, very basic, but
yeah.
We were using that to look up Sailor Moon stuff because we were like, oh, well, what else is out there? And we were making this huge notebook full of, like, printouts from websites. We were just, like, printing out website pages and posting them in this notebook. And that's what I remember using the early internet days for it. But Dave and I had to come up through this hobby, like, you know, like Dave was saying, like I was saying through... It was the early days of the internet, so eBay wasn't a huge thing. It was here.
eBay didn't exist.
eBay didn't exist yet.
Because eBay was created for Beanie Babies.
Yes. There wasn't a lot of toy sites on the internet in 94, 95, 96, like in the late 90s. All of my knowledge came from reading, like, every toy book I could get my hands on and just absorbing as much as I could and remembering from my own childhood what was out there. But it wasn't until, it wasn't until Power Rangers came out and the Zords started hitting that I started buying toys again and hunting down stuff. The early 2000s, I bought all my Brave Star stuff mint in box from warehouse finds when they were stupid cheap. Because I was like, well, I want to own something from my childhood, and I want to own them all in box, and that's what I went after. Just the course of over the years, just learn your hobby, like, know what's out there. I see so many people, and it drives me bonkers, but I'm not going to be one of those people on the internet who gets pissed at someone because they don't know something. But it does frustrate me to see people in this hobby on, like, an action figure identification board post a friggin' He-Man and go, what is this?
Or like Luke Skywalker.
Yeah.
What's this figure from?
It's like, come on, man. Like, use Google reverse image search and look it up and find out what it is. Like, don't just buy a bunch of stuff and then have people do your work for you. Like, do the research. I mean, look the stuff up and find it. Because there's, now there's a wealth of knowledge out there that's free to anyone, basically, that you can go out and search and look and learn, but I think if the one thing I wish I knew when I started was how expensive this hobby would turn out to be.
Nah. I knew it was going to be expensive.
And how much of a cheat. And the other thing I wish I'd known is that I should have bought a lot of this stuff in the early 2000s when I had a large amount of disposable income and just did nothing but buy toys for a long time. Because now, trying to find a lot of this stuff, like, I could have bought in 2000, 2001... a Filmation Ghostbusters Ghost Command playset for in a box for the price that I spent on the loose one that was broke and complete. I could have bought a lot of, hell, we could have, Star Wars figures were still expensive, but
But they were cheap. I mean, my thing was I was going to buy the new ones, and then once they were done,
right?
Because the original line only lasted like 6 years.
Yeah.
So I didn't think it was going to be like a 30-year ordeal.
No. I was looking over an old issue of Tomarts last night. From October 2001, so the month after 9/11, and was reading like the ads in there and looking at the prices for some of the stuff, and was amazed to see a lot of it still holds its value of the prices they're listing today. But a lot of it, like Star Wars wise and Masters wise and G.I. Joe, I'm like, for then, I'm like, those aren't terrible prices. Like,
yeah,
$25 for a package Snake Eyes,
Oh God, yeah.
It's like, geez, wish I'd have bought a lot of the stuff back then. We would have an amazing collection. And now it's just like, think about it. Back then, Superpower Cyborg was still one of the harder figures to find, but he would have only been like $100-$150 instead of...
The problem is back then I didn't have $100-$150.
Exactly. That's the other problem, is that it's not a lot of money back then. John Lefebvre says... let me try that again. John Lefebvre... Sorry. As I mumbled it the first time, if you could be made into a figure from any toy line, what line would it be? And what action figure, if any, would you have from any toy line? I imagine Dave would be from Star Wars. But would you be a Attack of the Clones toy where you had special features?
No.
No?
No. I mean, I don't know. I'd probably be a G.I. Joe, because I got better articulation. And
Yeah.
Generally.
I would probably be, a Rambo figure from Coleco.
Of course, yeah.
Well, they had fun. They had pretty decent articulation, and they had fun weapons. I mean, come on, who wouldn't want like a spring-loaded sword, or a rocket launcher, or, like Cat's crazy grappling hook that can actually twirl and actually like pull her up and stuff like that. That stuff's fun, man. Totally do that.
And I would have no action features because I hate those.
Oh, that is true.
I prefer articulation.
I want to read the responses to this because God bless Irizarry and Floorburger.
That's certainly an approach.
Yeah. But Irizarry always asks the most ludicrous, ridiculous questions.
He keeps asking the same question.
Because he's Mike Irizarry, and it's just how Mike is. Mike Irizarry wants to know how much you bench? And good old Flood. Josh responded back, measured in units of weight or a boxed flag. And then Josh responded
If he just left that one, my response was going to be like, I was going to say, I was actually going to answer that this time, but I don't know how much flags weigh in the box, so I can't answer it. So Mike missed his one opportunity to ever find out how much I actually bench. Thanks, Josh. You ruined it for Mike.
Josh responded back with, in quotations, as a conversation between two weightlifters. How much you bench, bro? Bro, I can bench a Draper collection of flags. Bro. It's
not that much.
That made me giggle last night. And I think even Carrie got a good chuckle out of it, too. Our good old friend Molly Cook wants to know how the fur babies are doing. We talked about Casey a little bit.
She's doing okay.
She's doing all right. Dash is doing pretty good for...
Yeah, he was...
Yeah, he's hanging in there.
Well, he was all perky today.
Yeah, he gets pills twice a day and help his heart beat and keep all the liquid off. And he's doing pretty good. Thank you for asking. He's still a perky little puppy dog.
I think we talked about it before the show. Casey's doing okay. Her surgery's healed up fine.
Yes. Her arthritis is bothering her.
Her arthritis is really kicked in. I think
it's the weather around here.
It's the weather, but it's also, I think I'm going to have to get her on pills, I think.
Yeah.
She was much perkier when she was on the pain pills for the operation.
Right. She was like, yay.
Like, yay.
Kind of hurts. Now she's like, oh, God, it hurts.
Like, ow. Well, I'm like, yeah, tell me about it, dog.
We, one of our cats, basically, I'm trying to think of what the word they use for it, but in sports, you know, when you catch a ball the wrong way on your finger and it...
Sprained.
The cat basically sprained one of his toes. Oh. And it's the toe on his back foot where he puts all his weight when he walks.
Oh, that's not good.
So we took him to the vet on Friday, and the vet was looking, and she was, you know, because their toes are curled, and you could straighten them. Yeah. So she was straightening knuckles one by one. She was like, this one. She'd go, this finger, meow, this finger, this finger, this finger, this finger, meow, meow, meow. Every time she bent that one toe, and she's like, well, that's what he's done. I was like, okay, thank God he doesn't have to lose a foot then.
Well, yeah, that would be good. Yes. I mean, it would be good that he's not losing the foot.
Speaking of our buddy Floorburger, Josh is in Washington, D.C., and he says, in terms of modern toys, what has been a white whale and always eluded you at retail? In other words, what is a toy you've never seen at retail
store? Friggin' Gartham.
But may have been at a toy show or purchased online. Yes, Dave's Gartham has still never hit our Toys R Us.
Scarif Black Series 4-inch figure is apparently impossible to find.
Yeah, which is weird.
Well, it's relatively new, but apparently Springfield got them, like, finally, and they're gone.
Yeah. My white whale...
I still need that friggin' yellow submarine.
Yeah, my white whale is...
I look every time.
My white whale has been the yellow submarine from Hot Wheels. I could buy one at a toy show, but I'd rather just buy one for a buck.
Yeah.
Than five. But yeah, the yellow submarine has been my white whale lately.
I've literally asked Hot Wheels people if it's still out there, and they're like, oh yeah, it's out there. I'm like,
can't find it. That is my white whale. Our good old friend Edas Barone, who we miss greatly.
Okay.
I miss him.
I do too. But...
I know. He never talks to us anymore.
He's got his own.
Yeah, I know. He's got his own.
He's outgrown us.
He has. God bless him.
He spread his wings and flew.
As he should have.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. He's a talented kid. He is. Shouldn't be stuck down here in the mud with us.
He doesn't need to hang around with us old farts.
Losers.
Our buddy Edas Barone says, I've been thinking about a lot about this lately. When do you think the bubble's going to burst on the pop vinyl hype?
Soon.
Sooner than later. They still sell well, but I start to see a lot more dealers, like Dave talked, like we talked about at the start of the show, Kane County seemed to be more modern, basically meaning there were a crap ton of vinyls. C2E2 had a shite ton of pop vinyls.
Doesn't surprise me at all.
I know one booth just had wall-to-wall pop vinyls, and it makes me wonder if they sold... I mean, I'm sure they sold.
See, here's the thing. But pop vinyls have gotten so big at this point and have so much diversity that... Oh, I can't remember the term. There's a term in biology for when a thing gets big enough, it can maintain its own body heat even if it's not warm-blooded.
Right.
And I think pop vinyls have kind of hit that point where, you know, like, I mean, I'm still buying... You know, they did Pinky and the Brain, so I got
right.
Pinky and the Brain.
Yeah, Pinky and the Brain, yeah.
But I think overall, as a phenomenon, I actually think we've peaked.
Yes, I agree.
I think it's big enough that it's going to keep going for a while. But I think in terms of...
I see at least another maybe 2 years before it finally...
And it's got... And the other problem is it's gotten so big that it can't be a... You know, like you know, they do so much that you can't really... each individual thing can't be a thing anymore.
Right.
Trying to come up with a different word than thing. Sensation.
Yes.
You know? Like, right. You make so much, okay, well, I bought Pinky and the Brain, but I didn't buy, you know, Pride and Prejudice and Zombies.
Exactly.
And Golden Girls and, you know, wrestling and football and, you know, so that it's, I think it has peaked, but you just don't notice it yet. Because, I mean, like, they still make Beanie Babies.
Exactly.
So, I mean, you know, this stuff doesn't go away forever, but I do think you'll start seeing more sales, and I think in maybe a year or two, you'll stop being that omnipresent, oppressive thing at toy shows.
Right, I agree.
As people get out of it.
Yes. Alexis Lazik says, your worst enemy is altered reality, and you can only have one toy, and that's it. And as an added insult, it must be the worst toy ever made, not line. The line could be the greatest in the world, for example. What is the worst toy that you must own, and why?
That is a long setup just to have me take a shot at GoBots.
Oh, it is.
And actually, there's a couple of GoBots that would probably be on that list. Those bigger ones that basically just, like, their head is like the roof of the car. You know what I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Those things look like garbage.
Yeah, I've got a bunch of those.
I'm sure you do.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That does not surprise me at all.
Mine would have to be the McDonald Land Grimace.
Oh, my God. That was like your... That goes back to your white whale.
Oh, it does. And I'm glad that I have it. It's a horrible toy, though. It's not even a toy. It's basically a stuffed animal on...
It's not even a stuffed animal. It's a paper mache... what do they call it? Like when you were a kid and you'd like blow up the balloon and then put paper mache over it.
Yeah.
And then you pop the balloon so it's hollow inside.
Yeah,
and you can
that's
crush
basically
it
what it is.
That's what it is, covered in felt.
Yep. That's probably the one bad toy I would have to own and be like, well, this is it for me. This is what I have. Yay. Metal Garcia says, if you could live in a live version of any board game, which would it be, and what board game would you not want to live in?
Okay, here's the because I mean, we ask these people to give us questions, and then now I'm nitpicking each question that comes up. But
that's you because you're grumpy. Because
I'm a jerk.
Yeah,
but
basically,
my point with this is that there are so many board games based on everything. Like, I'm sure there's a My Little Pony board game.
I would want to live in the My Little Pony board
game. I'm sure there's a Little Mermaid board game.
I would want to live in that one too.
And there are plenty of Star Wars board games.
The game that I would not want to live in is Fireball Island.
No, screw that noise.
Yeah. Or, no, better yet, the game I would not want to live in is, we did it on season 3 board. Yours. Your game. The Tower. Dark Tower.
Oh, Dark Tower.
Yeah, I was like, I can't, it's on the tip of my tongue. I wouldn't want to live in that board game. No.
Hmm.
Not with this giant, omnipresent tower screaming at me commands and whirling in the dark of the night. That scares me.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it would be Star Wars. And that's my point, is, like, there's nothing unique about the Star Wars board games.
Right.
That make me want to be in that. It's just, I want to be in Star Wars.
Right.
Fireball Island would probably be just because I hate Fireball Island. So much.
Dave does hate Fireball Island quite a bit.
But to pick a non-Star Wars, to play the game.
Yes.
To play that game.
Yes.
Probably Talisman.
Yeah.
Even though the last time I played, I sucked and died horribly.
Yes.
Yeah, like a fantasy kind of board game.
Yeah, we did not do good in Talisman.
I didn't.
Oh, I didn't either.
Yeah, you had an excuse.
Well, that's true. I'd never played it before.
There you go.
Yes. Game night is this week for David and I.
Hooray, and you're the picker.
I am the picker.
And the guy that we set up the game night specifically for...
Isn't going to be here.
Is probably going to bail on us.
Yeah, because it's planting season.
Whatever.
Darn
I like
farmers'
to farm
children.
So much.
Darn it.
What?
We're going to be playing Dragon Strike.
Okay.
And then on top of that, we're either going to be playing the.
Isn't that the complicated? Didn't I beg you not to do a complicated game? Because it's.
Sure, it's not that complicated. It's basically D&D in a board game setting.
Between you and Bill, man. Between you and Bill.
It's not that bad. Bill will live. I'm learning to play it right now, so it'll be fine.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I've never played this game. I've had this game since it came out in, like, 97. I've never played it.
Oh, good.
The same with the X-Men game that I've got upstairs on the table.
I saw that, yeah.
Yeah, I've never played that game. I bought it specifically because the figures were awesome. Never played that game. And just a treat for people listening to the show who watch Board, that game will be featured in next season of Board. And it specifically, there's a line in the script that I wrote that specifically has me saying... To Pixel Dan, I have never played this game. I've owned it since it came out, and I've never once played it. Literally bought it for the figures. Same with Dragon Strike. I bought it because it was a VCR game,
but
and the figures looked neat.
you know, fans aboard know that that's not a big surprise. There have been plenty of games where you guys have been like, oh, the figures are almost more cool than the game.
Yes.
There have been plenty of those episodes.
And my other little teaser for you is that we play the Star Wars Return of the Jedi Battle of the Sarlacc Pits. And if you've ever owned that game or played it, the figures for that game are the worst things ever.
Hmm.
Because they tried to paint those figures. Like, they're not painted by hand like they are, but the company that released it tried to paint those figures, and they are the worst. Like, Han Solo does not, like, I think I sent you a pic. Did I send you a picture?
You might have, yeah.
I know I sent Danny a picture, and I was like, this is supposed to be Luke Skywalker. And Dan goes, I don't know what you're talking about. That's the best Luke Skywalker I've ever seen.
Yeah, but that's Danny being Danny.
I know. Ah, man. Fun times. But yes, we'll be playing Dragon Strike this weekend. And then either Oregon Trail or the game that I found at Salvation Army for 99 cents.
Okay.
Which both of them, like Oregon Trail looks like it's pretty easy for an end of the night
game. Well, I would imagine. Yeah, it's a card kind
of game. And then the other one really only like takes 40 minutes, so that's another good end of the night game. But I'm excited. I'm looking forward to game night. I'm looking forward to not having to lug the TV and the VCR for once on my choice. Even though I want to play the other Nightmare games. I'm still kind of sad I had to sit the last one out because we had too many players.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to make someone else sit out on my game. So I was like, I'll sit out. It's fine. Because that's how I am. But I think we're only going to have like 6 players. So
I don't know how many people are going to have.
Yeah, I'm not sure either. But we get to play Oregon Trail. And then the redhead can get off my back about wanting that game so bad and then never playing it. So there you go, guys. That's going to wrap up the show for us. David, I'll be back next week. Make sure you check out our sponsor.
Didn't I buy that for you as a gift?
You did. I've never played it.
Yeah. Like, so what's she complaining about? Yeah, you didn't pay any money for it.
Yeah, I don't know. Make sure you check out our sponsor, Shellhead Comics, the Shellhead Comics blog, and more at shellheadcomics.com. Check them out. Check us out on iTunes and Stitcher under Toy World Order and on YouTube, youtube.com/ToyWorldOrder and youtube.com/BoardTheShow. Make sure you hit subscribe, mash the like button, comment, check it all out. And gang, until next week, David.
You don't have to go home, but you cannot stay here.
The Toy Bar Peeps is closed. Peace out.